Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today, and welcome to Fireside Chat, Security and Compliance in the Shared Responsibility Model with OG&E and Anapsys. I'm Heather Lima. I'm a content producer here at ASUG. Today's webcast will be recorded, and you will receive a post-event email with a link to the on-demand recording. Please feel free to pass that link along to any colleagues if you found the information in this webcast useful. And at the end of the webcast, a two-question survey is going to pop up on your screen. Please take a moment to fill it out because we like to know what you think here at ASUG. If you have any questions, please enter them in the Q&A box over to your left. And any questions we don't get to on the webcast, we will be sure to answer offline. Now I'll hand it off to Paul Kleinschmidt, CRO of Anapsys. Paul, please take it away.
Heather, thank you so much for the introduction. Thank you, ASUG, for hosting us. I am very excited for our conversation here today with my friend Ian Anderson from OG&E. We'd love to just start with some introductions. So if I can get these slides to work. All right, Ian, we're going to start with you. I'd love for you to introduce yourself as well as your company.
Yeah.
OG&E.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, kind of wherever you are in the world. My name is Ian Anderson. I'm the Director of Enterprise Security, Network, and Monitoring at Oklahoma Gas and Electric. OG&E, we are a vertically integrated, investor-owned electric utility. And that's all just kind of fancy talk for we're your electric company. We generate, we transmit, we distribute electricity. Ultimately, we rub things together and we get them to your house. And that's that electricity you use to power your businesses, your lives, everything in between. And so we're headquartered in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, where we proudly serve a little over 900,000 customers across the Oklahoma service area and even into parts of Arkansas. So for me personally, director, so I'm the executive responsible for all security, cyber, physical, IT, OT. My teams also include our network and telecommunications team, as well as our monitoring or observability team. So been doing this SAP security thing for about close to 10 years now, and it's been quite a lot has changed over the past decade, so it's a real treat to get to come, to this group and hang out with you, PK, and talk about some of the things that are going on.
Thanks, Ian. Yeah, OG&E has been a great customer, but more importantly, partner of ours. We've had a long-standing relationship. We appreciate the insights you provide us, both from the industry as well as features we put into the product based on your background. So as mentioned earlier, I am Paul Kleinschmidt. I am our Chief Revenue Officer here at Anapsys. Essentially, I'm responsible for all of our customer-facing functions. At Anapsys, we've been around for a while. We've been around for 16 years. We've got over 300 Global 2000 customers. One of the things that we're very, very proud of is that we've identified over 1,000 zero-day vulnerabilities. In fact, in any given month, we've identified 40% to 60% of the vulnerabilities that SAP has ultimately generated patches for. We're also the only SAP-endorsed security product within the portfolio. What that simply means is we go through an annual certification, both from a product perspective as well as a security perspective, and we've got a number of shared resources across SAP and Anapsys that are working together as we build solutions to help defend the likes of Ian and OG&E and others. And then lastly, we're very proud that our customer CSAT is 96% plus. So with that, let's jump into the content. The format we're going to use today is a fireside chat. Ian and I just thought that going through a conversation rather than a bunch of slides would be of more value and be more interesting to everyone.
Yeah.
And really, what we want to start with is the topic of today, as mentioned, is the shared responsibility. It's a bit of a reality check for individuals, especially as it relates to thinking about moving to RISE. The industry joke is that shared responsibility often turns into shared blame when visibility gaps are ignored.
Yeah.
When individuals like Ian and his organization look at moving to RISE, The reality is SAP's done a phenomenal job in putting together the appropriate security controls and technologies to support the infrastructure in the cloud, but your data you still own and you're ultimately accountable for. And there's this intersection between security, networking, and monitoring. Ian's not just the security guy. Ian sits right in the middle at OG&E between operations, compliance, security, networking, and monitoring, where he is central to understanding the problem, solving for the problems, mitigating it, and has a really, really keen perspective on this. So, Ian, how about we jump in?
Yeah.
This first part is we want to talk about, who does what as it relates to the shared responsibility model.
Yeah.
And the first question I have for you is when you started this engagement and you looked at the RISE contract, what was the biggest aha when it related to your responsibilities versus SAP's responsibilities and ultimately accountability?
Yeah, I mean, I think to properly answer that question, you got to go back like way before RISE. Right. So our journey around SAP security really started in earnest around 2017, where we started to kind of see the wind shift. Right. With things like ERPs and, SAP specifically as a threat to our organization. I think, a lot of us kind of sit and, you worry about the email, you worry about, Active Directory. Like you just have these systems that you worry about more because you see it in the news more, or, and you don't really think about like an ERP, like your core business application. Like what happens truly if like an adversary gets a hold of that? But as we've seen over the past decade, with cyber criminals really focusing more on monetization rather than other impacts and denials, SAP is ripe for that type of activity. And so that's kind of what started us down this journey, 10 years ago with ECC. And so, like many companies, we had this very traditional SAP deployment. It was all on-prem. It's kind of tucked away. It's hidden. It's by no means does that mean it was impervious, right? But, there's different layers of abstraction. Like the attacker had to do a whole lot more work in order to be able to get into this environment. But it was a real eye-opener because we recognized things like, hey, our patching and note processes, aren't necessarily conducive to the way the modern world is shifting, right? It's like, you see a 0 day go from your report down to a concept to an exploitable package, within, days now rather than months. And even for something as complicated as SAP, we're seeing the time to action shrink from the adversarial perspective. So when we first kind of got a hold of this contract, and SAP is pitching this idea of shared responsibility. We're like, great, like we kind of like that, because there's a lot, like when you hear shared responsibility, you really think partnership, right? And so we went in with all these kind of preconceptions of like, hey, here's the stuff, like you're going to handle this and we're going to handle that, but we're going to share some visibility because that's what partners do. Like we hold each other accountable, we support each other. And it wasn't necessarily that. Right. It was, we handle the infrastructure. You don't worry about any of that, which is a major change for us. Like when you own everything on-prem and you can really put your hands on the metal, on the devices, you can go and look at all the traffic you want. Like there's nothing that kind of gets in your way of getting a holistic view of your environment. And I think like that has actually been probably the more challenging shift for most companies, that they've gone from a very IT-centric ability to monitor and having to shift into this new paradigm, which is what shared responsibility calls for, which is an application-centric monitoring and security program. Like, I liken SAP a lot to OT, operational technology. I call it OT of the business, right? So we're an electric company. We've got power plants. We've got transmission systems, distribution systems, a lot of cyber mechanical parts and things that are going on in our environment, because we're producing this physical product and kind of getting it out into the world. When you look at the challenges we have on the OT side, right, you have kind of these systems that get put in and they may live there for 10, 20 years. really the only people that know how these things work are maybe the folks that put it in originally, and they just kind of hung around, and so they've got decades of experience kind of taking care of, you know, some of these systems. They don't handle change very well, and but for the most part, they're pretty reliable. Well, like, and then, you know, from a talent perspective, it's kind of a niche area. Like, finding someone that is really good with like OT or OT security is really difficult. Now, if I hadn't used the words OT at all in that, my little statement there, you know, it would sound a lot like SAP as well, right? We put in these SAP systems and they'll sit there for 10, 20 years. And then we're like kind of forced upgrade. SAP is really built on the backbone of people that have just done it forever. And then if you really want to get some talent, you either have to grow it yourself, or it's really expensive to get off the market because there's just not a ton of people out there. So that's still the legacy. But now SAP is shifting all of that through the shared responsibility model. And we kind of joke, we don't really view it as the shared responsibility model, because really, like, what they're not sharing is accountability. Because no matter what happens, like, oh, you know, their infrastructure gets popped, our infrastructure gets popped, but, you know, there's going to be finger pointing, there's the blame game, all that stuff. My customer is not going to care. My regulators are not going to care. They're going to say, well, OG&E, that's on you. And so regardless of shared responsibility, it is not shared accountability. And that's one of the things that we can't, as defenders and as leaders, we cannot lose sight of. And so that's like, we went in really excited and we're like, oh, well, can like, look, it's all Azure. So just set up a, you know, log forwarding. And like, so we can see the things that are going on in the infrastructure. No, that's not what shared responsibility means, right? We were advocating for shared accountability, not shared responsibility. And so that was kind of been the wake up. And we realized like, hey, so now we have to really manage, you know, what are our true exposures? What are the things that we really need to focus on? And it is, it's at the app level. So,
you know, and I've heard others in similar roles as yours describe SAP as, you know, more akin to OT, like you mentioned, or even referred to as shadow IT. And especially thinking about this idea of, you know, the accountability, you know, is that's not shared and is not going to change. Were there anything internal to your organization that you had to do to either educate or rally the appropriate stakeholders to, you know, drive awareness or acknowledge that reality?
Yeah, certainly at first. I mean, this is completely absent of RISE, but I think, you know, I mean, I've literally had a security vendor say, who asked me, like, why do you care so much about SAP security? And this is actually when we were trying to acquire Onapsis for the first time. A reseller told me that to my face, and it's like, well, then you clearly don't understand SAP, or you don't understand some of these massive systems. Internally, you know, again, speaking of the fragility or the perceived fragility of SAP, and I think some of our legacy systems were probably in this condition. There's real fear that, hey, if you put in anything into SAP, that it's going to harm performance, it's going to impact customers, it's going to impact financials, it's going to do all these things. Well, luckily, we had spent years kind of getting better in the OT security space. So we actually applied a lot of those same concepts, right? So everything is passive, you know, the security tool like kind of fails, for lack of a better phrase, before the actual production tool. Uptime is paramount. I got to tell you, the amount of stress testing that we put onto our Onapsis products prior to allowing anything into production, we ended up shaking out more performance and supportability errors in our other third-party tools and other things that we had put in that were quote-unquote business critical, you know, far more than anything Onapsis found. So, like, we were stress testing the heck out of our environment and finding it's all the other stuff we had that was causing problems, but we're glad that we knew about it. So that created an opportunity for us to like tell that story of like, hey, this is not about like security is a partner and security is an integrated concept of this and we can help. And we're not here to bring you down. So that established a little bit of the rapport. So going into RISE and that migration, it made a lot more sense. And we could even, you know, say things like, hey, like, you know, we're doing code analysis. And so like, let's not inject bad code. Cause we went back and looked at all of our old legacy code in ECC and it's like, some of it was not very good. And I've probably, you know, people here attending may be shocked, like, oh my God, there's bad ABAP out there. Yeah. You know, so we were able to say, like, hey, like, let's try to get clean and stay clean, you know, throughout this deployment. We used it as a tool to kind of tell a positive story about, you know, how, like, we, you know, we are very intentional around, you know, the supportability, the security, the maintainability of our SAP environment. And look, you know, one of the things that has helped out huge is, you know, SAP vulnerabilities are starting to become more common. And so, you know, like Onapsis Threat Intelligence actually, you know, will send something out. And to be able to go into the platform. So let me just tell a story. I think it was like the Wall Street Journal or MSN or something, you know, published a story about how SAP environments were getting hacked. And it caused almost like this little panic among the, you know, in a C-suite. They will read that and be like, oh, we also use SAP. Like, how in trouble are we? Are we the next Jaguar? And then you can go into, you know, into the platform, and you can see, yep, we see the vulnerability. Here are the devices that, you know, are prone to it. And so either, like, you know, either we validated that we're not susceptible, or we have a direct path to know what is susceptible. And just being able to speak at that level of intentionality and just, you know, kind of control over your own environment on that side is incredibly powerful. And so we've really been sure to tell the right stories, build the right relationships, which has made the RISE transition easier. Not easy, because it's a huge pain, but it's made it easier from a security side, because we're not kind of like creating these relationships on the fly. Like, we've established this rigor and this rapport, and now we're leveraging the tools to actually drive projects forward.
You know, and it sounds like being able to respond to scenarios, whether it's responding to news article or anything else within, you know, the board level, executive level, or even within your teams, drives another level of confidence within the organization.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, look, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make the right tooling and process decisions. We're trying to develop the right people. So one, when bad happens, because it's going to happen, we're ready to do it. We're ready to handle it. But also, like, you know, we're thinking strategically. Like, the next ask, the next need is coming. And so, it, you know, our belief is, if we're efficient, if we're effective, if we are doing things intelligently, it's a lot easier for C-suites to support. I think the wind's back. So.
So let's transition to compliance for a second. We all know that compliance is meant to be in place to help security and be a mechanism for control. Yeah. Utilities is obviously under a microscope, whether it's NERC, CIP, or other regulations. How did the move to RISE either simplify or complicate that?
Wow, that's a good question. From a federal regulatory perspective, if you're an electric utility, the big challenge is around NERC SIP. We've kind of like bifurcated or separated ourselves from that, you know, to reduce our compliance related exposure. But, you know, it's interesting. SOX, Sarbanes-Oxley, is absolutely still in play. So if you're publicly traded, you have to align with that. We took that as an opportunity to actually get better, and to, like, you know, we went and reviewed our processes and redefined them, and then went and built in the controls necessary from an apps platform perspective. There's a little bit of feedback. I don't know if that's me. I hope not. So we took it as an opportunity to kind of redefine some of our compliance processes. We have been very intentional around having this concept of, like, the tools work for us rather than we work for the tools. Because what we saw over the past, like, 20 years of living with ECC was that a lot of our processes started to kind of take on a tint of, like, well, we're there to feed the beast that is ECC rather than the ECC working actively for us. And so as we kind of redefine that, and then figuring out what are the right integration points One of the real challenges we've had is around just, being able to do investigative things when it comes to compliance level activity. And that's one thing that we've been really proud to get to work with you all, with Onapsis on the Investigate, solution or module that is either out or coming out. So we can say, hey, we still have this type of activity. Where else can we find this? Right. And it's almost like we're able to now do threat hunting, but from a compliance perspective. Now, compliance, you'll hear me readily argue, compliance does not equal security, but they can work together. And so, if we're able to say we've got the secure environment, but, obviously some sort of control needs to be tuned or adjusted. And how do we go do that to ensure that we're meeting the compliance related need? That's been pretty successful. So you got to take this like migration or whatever you're doing. If you're moving into Rise, you have to take that as an opportunity rather than as a punishment to go and change things for the better. Because you're not going to get another chance. Once that's in, it's in. None of us can go change our legacy ECC environments. So why do we think that we're going to be able to put stuff in and then go clean up and put security in after the fact? It's just not going to work very well.
And that's so true. And I've heard you mention a couple times, whether it's on this webcast or just conversations you and I have had, which is you can't defend what you don't see.
That's right.
And so how do you gain the visibility into an environment that you're not physically managing?
Well, what a hassle, because we have traditionally relied upon network level controls, like the ability to just see at a packet level who's coming and who's going. So we've had to really adjust and kind of embrace, some of the new world order. So, one of the things that I probably think about this too much is this, this concept called cyber persistence theory. So just, for everyone's awareness, I have a side hustle. I'm on the faculty at Arizona State University, and I teach in the Master of Arts in Global Security program. So if you're looking for a good master's, you should check that one out. But one of the classes I teach is around cybersecurity strategy and planning, and we're really starting to focus on this concept of cyber persistence theory, which basically says that, this idea that we are deterring negative cyber activity is crazy. It's just not the reality. And what they're saying is that, the cyber domain itself is like this domain of persistent contact, which is an interesting take when you apply that to Rise, because look, Rise is now putting yourself, like you are now out in some sort of hyperscaler, and you can either be directly, exposed to the internet, you can be partially exposed, you can be fully encapsulated, but you are now in a different kind of touch area, right? You can't hide behind obscure IP addresses. The friction is very, very different for an adversary to come touch you, right? Which is what the cyber persistence theory calls for. It says in the traditional kind of battle spaces, kinetic and all that, you actually have to cross an ocean and you have to get somewhere. Well, really, for something like a SAP Rise environment, anyone in the world can touch it. It's as much a feature as it is a bug. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to reduce down the opportunities for exploitation in areas that we can control, right? And so exploitation occurs through, the traditional SAP approach to things, which is role-based access control. You handle that. So authentication, authorization. But beyond that, exploitation still occurs, at a code level. And that's still where the vast majority of folks are weak. And so that's where Onapsis is coming in and saying we've got, on the application layer, the layer that we can control, we have the appropriate vulnerability, response. We're seeing things going in. We're monitoring for, types of activity that are indicative of exploitation, because that's where we are kind of forced to go have that battle.
Our abstract mentions that early decision or making decisions early in the process as moving to any kind of hyperscaler is critical.
Yeah.
If you could go back and based on the lessons you learned or the scars on your back or the decisions you made that were key early, What would be a couple, whether technical or procedural, guardrails that you put in place or that you would recommend, you know, individuals who are looking at this put in place now or early?
Yeah, it's a weird deal because SAP is also moving so fast and things are changing continuously. And so whatever you put in, you need to really understand and be flexible. So as an example, there's a lot of ask around like clean core, right? Oh, we want to go to a clean core, right? What that is not saying, like, I think that there's some confusion of there's clean core and then there's custom code, right? Clean core is not calling for the elimination of custom code, right? Mm-hmm. And so custom code is getting pushed into this thing called BTP, which frankly is a new paradigm for SAP. It's a kind of a new product. And we already, like, I know, like, you know, Paul or PK, like we ran into issues between OG and ONAPS. It's like, how are we even, you know, how's BTP licensed? And we had to go work through that because, like, look, that the ground was shifting under both of us. And what we were realizing was, like, you know, we were micro segmenting a lot of our BTP areas, but that wasn't necessarily conducive to licensing, and it created identity access management challenges and things like that. And so, you know, what I would recommend is, like, whatever you do, build in flexibility, because the things will change around you. Because, like, it's my personal opinion that a lot of RISE is kind of being like design, you know, we're building the airplane as we fly it, right? And we went live about a year ago. And I can tell you, like, structurally, a lot of things have already changed. Now, it's kind of smoothing out a little bit for us. You know, these deployments are so big and complicated. But it is important that you have an organization that can kind of pivot and kind of make some adjustments, because the cloud is going to require that. Now, like, let's go make lemonade out of lemons, right? Because that sounds terrible. But once you start to get better at, like, being able to move quickly, there's other benefits that come with that. So going back to cyber persistence theory, like, and let's just talk about vulnerabilities. So the average time of a vulnerability, you know, to go from, like, hey, 0-day announcement or patch notification, or so an end day, if you will, you know, is, you know, for SAP could have been like 30 days or something. I mean, it's going to get boiled down to like literally a day. It'll eventually maybe get boiled down to hours. Thanks, artificial intelligence, right? So now as organizations, we have to be able to patch faster. We have to be able to move quicker, because our exposure to the adversary is different now. We can't hide behind a lot of the traditional controls we have relied upon in the past. And so we have to go remove opportunities for exploitation rather than create the wall, right? Like, there is no big firewall that's coming to save you. We have to go actually make institutional, you know, or, you know, fixes at the code level or the process level or the system level in order to reduce opportunities for exploitation. So that's where I see the big challenge for us organizationally, not just, you know, at OG&E, we're getting better, but, like, I think across the entire landscape is we're a collection of users that are more or less used to patching maybe monthly. I know I've seen some shops that have patched twice a year. You know, there's a HR patch and then there's the, you know, daylight savings patch or whatever, right? So there's like two of these patches and then they throw all the notes in. It's just this big endeavor. We're going to have to get leaner. We're going to have to get faster, because that is what the adversary is going to force our hand into.
You know, it's your insights into these subjects are always fascinating to me. I could ask a lot of questions and we could go on for hours, but what I'd like to really transition into is what's next for OG&E. Maybe touch on, you mentioned earlier, you know, the new product that Onapsis has launched called Investigate.
Yeah.
Would love for the audience to learn, you know, how has your relationship with us evolved? Yeah. What are you expecting from us in general?
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, how are you planning on using this Investigate product?
Yeah. So, you know, like, we, like a lot of companies out there, I think that we really value being able to control our own destiny at some level. Right. So I don't like to play victim. I like to call the shots. And so, you know, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to kind of gain the initiative over our own environment. And so what does that mean? Like, that's just for most of us, that's a fancy way to say, I'm going to hunt. Problem is, we don't really know how to hunt in some of these environments. And even with the hunt, what do we do about it, right? So, you know, what we're going to be looking to do is like, how are we intaking threat intelligence and not just indicators of compromise, right? We are moving so far beyond just like, oh, you know, IPs, hashes, like that's table stakes. And if you're not doing that today, like you're really going to have some significant challenges. What we're looking at is TTPs. And because what we see is the advanced adversaries are living off the land. They're taking identities, they're pivoting, they're exploiting internal, they're doing all sorts of interesting stuff. We don't necessarily know what that looks like in our own environment. And so things like adversary emulation, mixed with high-end investigative capabilities that will help us hunt forward, with the byproduct being now we go tune our security controls. So what we do at OG&E is we take in threat intel, we emulate the activity, and then we say, all right, did my tools see it? Did they alert on it? Did they block it? In that order, because you can't alert what you don't see, and you certainly can't block what you don't see. And so we do have that cascade. You also don't necessarily want to block everything just offhand, right? You want to maybe say, like, is this worth blocking? And, you know, like, what are some of the downstream impacts? And by the way, like, you learn this the hard way when you start, you know, messing around with OT systems. It's not always the best idea to just kill a process. This is not IT, right? And that's why I would argue, like, ERPs are not IT. They're very different. I don't know if I can call them OT, but they are very different than your traditional IT services. So that's what we're going to be working on is how do we, one, ensure that we're getting the value out of our investments. So like we're challenging them, we're seeing how they operate based upon actual threat intelligence of how the adversary is actually working. Then we're tuning our controls and we're seeking to move faster. Like that's the goal. And we think the RISE environment actually lends itself to some of those capabilities.
You know, Ian, I want to turn this over to Q&A here in a second, but I love this quote from you where, and you've touched on this, you know, actually several times in this discussion, but security isn't a project phase, it's a foundation.
Yeah.
If you wait for security if you wait for the phase of your RISE migration, you've already lost.
Yeah.
So any additional parting kind of wisdom or recommendations or even coaching for those who are on the line or listening?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like there's so many now opportunities out there. So look, we just deployed RISE. We're already working on a big upgrade. So these things are coming back again. It's never too late to get started, right? And start building the relationships. Our initial entry into the SAP security space was hard because we were introducing new concepts. But like an ERP, it's not like nothing's gonna get done in a day. And it takes repetition, it takes focus, it takes intentionality, you know, showing up every single day. You know, we kind of joke about like a lot of the times my security team feels like, you know, we're tourists, right? Like we show up, we're kind of looking around like, oh, this is kind of neat. You're just kind of learning and, you know, you're just there to kind of like let the tour guide tell you about all the cool stuff it can do. That's kind of where it all begins. And so like, don't be afraid of being the tourist. Like the problem with a lot of security people, and I know I've kind of fought this at times, is like you go in and people look to you for answers, or they look to you as like, oh, you're the smart guy in the room. Go be the dumb guy in the room and just go listen and just go learn. And then you come back and always be offering something. One of the things PK can attest, one of the things I'm always pushing our vendors on is the days of having these really expensive security specific tools are coming to an end, because we are now approaching a point where leaders, so executive teams, shareholders, right? Like everyone is looking and say like, okay, I've got this tool like Onapsis. And it sits in this wonderfully privileged part of a very important system. What other value can I go derive out of it? And so one of the things I've liked about working with PK and his team is, you know, this is how I think. And when I throw out ideas of like, hey, what if it could do this? You know, the answer is, huh. You know, it's not like, yeah, that's not really what we do. you know, it's always like, okay, like help us understand the value. Because ultimately, like, security has to continue being a value add and not just a cost center. Like we're already expensive enough, right? once we add value because we sit in unique places and have unique perspectives on the things that are the interactions that are going on in these systems, it becomes way more valuable to the organization. And that's how you become sticky. How do you get other teams using your security tools, not just the security teams themselves?
You know, it's Ian, it's one of the reasons why our organizations have had such a strong and positive relationship is we value the same, very similar things. In fact, one of our core values is hacking it. And really what that means is celebrating and encouraging individuals within our organization to experiment, try new things. And there's not a negative consequence for doing so. And, you know, having feedback from customers like yourselves to, you know, either we collectively hack it and then maybe it generates a new feature or yeah. new intel or whatnot. It's actually a testament to the new product that we launched as well. So we appreciate the relationship and we appreciate the insights. At this point, I'm going to turn this back to Heather to open up for Q&A.
All right. So if you have any questions, please go ahead and enter them in that Q&A box over to the left, and we will get started. Guys, it looks like you have a friend in here. He says, Ian Varela, forgive me if I mispronounce your name, says, hi, Ian and Paul. This is Ian Varela from Cypher BSC. Ian, how did OG&E balance SAP's portion of the shared responsibility model with your own accountability for the application layer?
Hang on. Spam call. Sorry. Okay. Hey Ivan. Great question. So how did OG&E balance SAP's portion of the shared responsibility with our own accountability? We try to do some things around, how are we creating opportunities for visibility in places that we do control, right? So this idea that an ERP is 100% isolated in its own environment, we quickly realize that may not necessarily be the case. There's the real value of an ERP is it can integrate with pretty much anything. And so what we did is we set up opportunities and detection points, you know, at those kind of gateways, so we can at least see some things that are going on. And then, you know, we attempted to derive logs out of SAP that, you know, maybe indicates like, hey, we've got a long running batch job, or we've got, you know, these challenges, these things going on. you know, what you won't necessarily get from SAP is that clear, like, check mark guidance of like, yeah, you do this, 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 and this. They basically just say anything beyond the infrastructure is your responsibility. And so, you know, we had to kind of just figure out how to go get clever and kind of hack it in a way and say, all right, given these connections, given these data points, like, you know, what are some assumptions that we could go make about not only the security of the environment, but also the performance, because performance matters. That's what your customers are going to be looking at. Security is expected, you know, performance is expected. So how are you tracking risk mitigation efforts and performance cybersecurity KPIs? Across all OG&E, we got some things. With SAP specifically, Onapsis is our partner. And so it does have some robust reports. One of the things that has been great is, some organizations will outsource elements of their SAP support stack. So like Basis, for example, you know, one of the things that we always wonder is like, well, how do we keep Basis accountable? Because really it's their job to do this stuff, right? And so we've been able to leverage Onapsis to help, and actually build in, you know, like KPIs and things like that into these agreements and saying, hey, like we're expecting this level of vulnerability management, you know, this time to act, you know, this amount of time to kind of get these notes in, these fixes in, reduce risk. The platform has been a great tool in that regard. Good question. Thank you.
Thanks for your answer. So the next question is, we have some systems on RISE, not ERP. Yeah. RISE has lots of security holes inherent in the build. For example, enforcement of encrypted RFC, which violate SAP's own recommendations. So how are you dealing with that?
Probably the same way you are, Daryl. I mean, we're doing our best because it is. Like, I mean, it's a real interesting, interesting thing, right? Because they've got some stuff that's like in RISE, but then they've got a whole suite of other applications that are not. So like SuccessFactors, Fieldglass, I mean, don't even get me started on IAG and IAS and some of the other, you know, three-letter acronyms that are really four-letter words, if you catch my drift. We you know, like one of the things that's maddening to me is the lack of firefighter continuity across their services, right? So firefighter is a critical control for many of us to go and, you know, to manage admin rights. You know, I looked at, like, it's almost like SAP, like, kind of pioneered in some ways, like with the GRC module and being able to kind of do that level of enforcement. But then if we go today, like, man, the Microsoft Entra deployment of privileged identity management, which is effectively just like the firefighter process, is so much better than what SAP has. And it's so much more consistent, which is crazy to talk about, like Microsoft having a consistent security strategy against their cloud properties. So like that's more of the struggle that I've been experiencing, is just like the lack of consistency. Not only in just like the gaps in coverage and saying like, oh yeah, you can't encrypt this or can't encrypt that, but like the other tooling and services that we do rely on that are SAP owned and developed, and we're not seeing that consistently deployed across their apps. Now, part of it is, you know, they're buying these products and then they're quickly integrating it because they got to get it to market, but it's like behind. It doesn't like follow some of the same access control mechanisms. Like it's just, you know, it's like, I'll go back to my earlier statement. There's a lot of building the airplane while we fly it. And so this is where I say, like, being nimble, being agile, you know, and having an organization that is resilient is going to pay off big time as we continue to kind of like smooth these things out. But I, like, we all know SAP doesn't turn on a dime. So, you know, I would expect these conditions to persist for a bit.
Thank you.
That probably not the really uplifting insightful answer Daryl was looking for, but it is what it is.
Well, it doesn't have to be. It just has to be real, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, but like, look, I'm not shy to kind of bag on SAP, you know, where they deserve it. Now, I will say, you know, going back to the shared responsibility model, look, there's so much potential value in SAP controlling the infrastructure. There's so much potential value in just some of the micro segmentation and just leveraging the cloud for how it has truly been designed. Like, you know, I think we initially even looked at, like, what if we host our own SAP environment, and all we were going to do is really replicate what we're doing in our physical data center up into the cloud, which is like just like using the cloud for all the wrong reasons. And so I do believe there's an immense amount of value in allowing SAP to manage the infrastructure and do things along those lines. It does hurt my soul a little bit to not be able to see, because I'm a trust but verify guy, see what's going on. But I do believe the RISE implementation is the right direction, and we will get to where we need to be. I think just as us as kind of frontiersmen, you know, in terms of customers, it's going to be interesting for a bit.
Well, thank you. SAP pushes the clean core methodology heavily for RISE customers. Mm-hmm. We all know this. Clean core is a hot topic. So Ian, how does having a specialized security partner like Anapsys help you maintain a clean core while ensuring your custom utility extensions don't introduce new vulnerabilities?
Yeah, so I don't think it actually helps us. Like, I don't look at, fundamentally, I don't view it as a clean core versus unclean core. I view it as clean code versus unclean code. I don't think like the location of the code matters. I think that's easiest. Like, if you say clean core, it really does kind of absolve SAP of like a lot of the other structural issues and things like that that they may have to deal with. I think it's in their best interest for you to not go mess with the core code set and to go leverage BTP for many, many reasons. But, you know, so for us, where does Onapsis fit in? Well, I mean, it is literally just the code scanning piece. Look, you know, we underwent this challenge years ago where we started really looking at the quality of our Java and ABAP code. Because like a lot of organizations, we've, you know, probably outsourced pieces of, you know, that development, and we've brought it in, and, you know, we did the code review and everything, but did the code reviewers know all the nuance of all the different, you know, RC calls and all the things that are going on? Maybe, maybe not. Right. And so what SAP has allowed us to do, or excuse me, what ONAPS has allowed us to do is go and take that code and say, all right, are we aligning with kind of basic standards? And where we're at now is we're not introducing critical vulnerabilities because it gets stopped before that happens. ONAPSIS has done a great job of like getting into that DevSecOps kind of pipeline and saying like, hey, we're going to prevent the build, we're going to prevent the migration until we get some clean code. And it will tick your developers off at first, but it ultimately ends up saving you a lot of headache from a, you know, your parent pulling things back, or your security team spending the weekend looking at a problem, you know, like, just like let's develop cleaner code. And also it sets an expectation. Like, we're not just like here to bang out some crummy code and just get it into production so I can cash my check and go home for the day. Like, these are real implications. So I don't want us as an industry to focus on clean core versus not or whatever. I think what we really need to do is focus on clean code. What I also don't like though is I can't necessarily scan the code that SAP puts in. Because I'm sure that that has its problems too.
I'm, you know, sure. I'll jump in real quick, especially as we're talking about clean code. You know, one thing that I'll mention, so I don't know if it's obvious, is our platform doesn't distinguish on whether it's human generated or AI generated code. it provides the same level of value and the same level of identification of vulnerabilities. So as all of us are trying to figure out what AI means in our worlds and how we manage, you know, agents and likely code generated from those agents. Just I wanted to make sure everyone's aware that our product doesn't distinguish. It'll provide the same value and provide that, you know, go through and identify the same vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, so the next question is, for utilities, the audit cycle never really ends. In the move to RISE and the shared responsibility model, have you found that your internal or external auditors had to change their approach? How did you prove to them that the shared components were actually secure?
Yeah, we got beat up on that, like the shared model, because they, you know, these are SOC systems. They want to know, like, well, what changes are happening? What's going on? And it's like, well, we don't really know. We're kind of blind to it. They don't want to call it a SaaS. They don't want to call it a PaaS. It's SAP RISE. Like, it's its own kind of unique animal. where we benefited is just, you know, we try not to be adversarial with our auditors, because one, as this question rightfully calls out, the cycle never ends. And so these people are coming right back around. I've seen a lot of organizations kind of go more the, I'm going to be antagonistic toward my auditor, and it never ends up well. So what we really focus on is like, all right, how do we get to a shared okay, right? Like, I know I'm not going to get everything I want, and that's okay, right? And so we try to have these relationships, because then we can leverage those relationships and say like, hey, like, here's the reality that we're dealing with. This isn't OG&E making this decision. This is SAP. And look, you know, our auditors are, you know, and they're trying to figure all this stuff out too. And so maybe this is an opportunity as the customer that we can help grow our auditors. We can say, hey, here's how we view this problem. And then they can take it back to their partners and stuff like that. And we can start building a more reasonable kind of compliance stack. The paradigms are shifting. Things are different. And so they're going to be relying on, here's how I've traditionally done it. Well, that's no longer available. So how do I go answer something similar? This is where ONAPSIS comes in for us, right? So like, one of the questions we get is like, well, who's got dialogue access? What, you know, what are these firefighter accounts up to? Well, we actually have custom alerts that are all set up to like notify when certain types of events happen, and it triggers an incident. We do all sorts of stuff. And then at the end of the day, we hand that report over to our auditors, and they're like, okay, this gives me that warm and fuzzy. Well, we can test it with them and all of that stuff. So it's like, look, tools at the end of the day, and PK, this is not to kind of dump on ONAPSIS, but like, every tool out there is going to fail you at some point. That's why we at OG&E don't really look at it like tools are opportunities to communicate. They are relationship building opportunities. Like, we take Onapsis and we say, this is how I'm measuring performance, you know, of my groups. This is how I'm helping keep, you know, customer stuff secure, but I'm also telling a story of effective management across my organization. I am working with our auditors to help make sure that we're compliant with our SOX controls and that we're getting a favorable judgment, you know, that's shared with our board and our stock shareholders and things like that. Like, you know, the people, the relationships are what's actually going to pull you out of the fire. The tool itself is just a mechanism to build those relationships and help streamline and make you a little bit more operationally efficient in what you're trying to accomplish.
I couldn't agree more.
Great. Yeah, sorry, PK. Most of these are for Ian.
Okay. He likes it like that.
Oh, great.
No one wants to hear me talk. Ian's a star.
Well, since most utility companies have a security operations center that monitors the network, can you explain why a traditional security operations center might be blind to an SAP level breach? And how has OG&E bridged that gap in their IT security and functional?
I mean, with RISE, they're looking at the wrong stuff. The way we have traditionally went, and maybe this electric utility industry, we are a cyber physical company. Like, we have very physical assets. Like, we deliver a physical good. We have a service territory. Like, everything is kind of geospatial. It's physical in nature. And so for us, it's like, you know, you can't necessarily touch a packet, but you can kind of conceive of one, right? But what we're really talking about with RISE is like monitoring this like amorphous SAP thing, right? And if you're an SAP outsider, like a lot of, you know, like a lot of us, you're like, I don't know what all these SKUs are. Like, everything's like this weird three letter like acronym for stuff. And, you know, there's all these different landscapes, and like, it's this weird language. And we've never really, I think the vast majority of security teams have never understood how to speak that language. Onapsis platform for us has been like almost like a translator, right? And so, like, when, you know, and as we were, you know, implementing RISE, we were lucky enough to have a Onapsis resident engineer kind of helping us build out a lot of these things. And so what she actually went and did was she, you know, would walk through like, hey, we saw this event in Onapsis, and then work with our SOC team and say, when you see this, this is what it actually means. Right, because we don't speak SAP, and so we needed almost like a Sherpa to help us like understand kind of some of the basics. And then, like, look, your SOC teams are smart. All they really need is just like someone to, like, you know, give me a little bit of a push. I need a little bit of guidance, and then I'm a smart person. I can go figure some of these things out. The way SAP operates is just inherently different than a lot of the other stuff that, you know, our defenders are asked to go and secure. So that's why I would say we've been blind, and especially traditionally, we've been able to hide SAP behind things that do fit our traditional like paradigms for securing an environment. So it's been behind a firewall and network, and, you know, we've had access to the Unix, Linux logs or whatever, right? Infrastructure logs. We've never really had to focus on the application side itself.
Nice. I love the idea of having a Sherpa.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll run that by
our marketing team might steal that from you.
Yeah.
So in the RISE environment, SAP handles some patching, but the customer handles others. Yeah. How do you manage timing and testing of security patches so they don't disrupt the critical utility operations or billing cycles?
So what we're trying to do on the security side, like, I'm not dictating that. What I'm dictating is the reality that the adversary is moving faster, and thus our processes must be more efficient. But at the end of the day, like, security only gets to wield that hammer every so often, where it's like, thou shalt patch this within 24 hours. And we have to be very careful with how you wield that, right? Because you wield it too often, you'll lose it, and you'll lose the group. So what we're more trying to do is we're trying to, you know, to really better understand the criticality. So vulnerability enrichment is important. So things like, you know, the ONAPS Intel, SysaKev, you know, just other, like, how critical is this SKU? How critical is this business application? What is its, you know, its network exposure? Is this accessible via the internet, or do you have to be internal, or like, what is the makeup of this thing? What we have to start getting out of is like, oh, it's a CVE-10, so I've got to drop everything and go fix it. Well, no, that's not necessarily the case. Not all vulnerabilities are created equal across all organizations. In fact, a concept we're working on here at OG&E is actually something that's pushed by CISA and Carnegie Mellon out of Pittsburgh, and it's called the SSVC, or Stakeholder-Specific Vulnerability Categorization. And in fact, I may even hit up my friends at ONAPSIS to say, what if we were able to incorporate elements of this SSVC into our ONAPSIS vulnerability findings? Because what this will do is this says, all right, Ian, this is a drop everything and do it thing. Like, and here's why, and actually give reasons. People are very reasonable in my, well, let me roll that back. People can sometimes be very reasonable if you give them the right information to help them make an intelligent decision. So if you say, I've got this problem, this problem, this problem, like, here's why we are calling this a stop the presses, go fix this right now. I think if people understand the why, they're more likely to help you. But if you just come and say, patch this because I'm scared and I said so because I'm security, like, I think that's where you start to really run into problems.
No, I agree with you on that. Yeah. Thank you.
Such a good point.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's great. It. Yeah.
Well, we have time for one more question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to do this one. If someone in the audience is currently negotiating their RISE contract, what is one security requirement or visibility clause they should insist on including to ensure they aren't left in the dark after go live?
What is something that they need to push for? Like, you know, before that paper is signed, that's when you have all the power. And SAP has all sorts of security kind of add-ons. And I would get whatever you can possibly get out of that. I would say, show me your list of add-ons and then give me everything that you possibly got. Try and get all that built in. You know, I remember when we first started talking, they tried to upsell me for a next generation firewall, which is wild to me because I was doing next generation firewall stuff when I was a city municipal worker in 2015. That the fact that like SAP would come and say, yeah, this is an extra SKU. So take their list of stuff and say, like, why is this just not included? Like, we're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars. Like, why is some of this stuff not included? You don't get that power after you've signed. You only have that power before you sign. And they are trying to get people to sign that paperwork. So, and if anyone really wants to get wild, you know, go push for getting read-only access logs from their Azure infrastructure, AWS, like whatever their hypervisor is. And if you are successful, let me know. I will buy you a coffee or a beer or a soda, and I will pick your brain because that is like my holy grail of getting that level of information to help defend my organization. So,
awesome. You heard Ian. He just offered you a drink or wine or
ready.
Soda.
Yeah.
Or- yes, so we're going to wrap up now. Please go ahead and check out what we've put in the resource box over to your right. There are a bunch of different white papers and things that can help you out. And we're going to wrap up this webcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Ian and PK, for such great insights. We really appreciate your expertise.
Yeah. And we'll put Ian in the expertise category. I appreciate that. And I appreciate anyone who spent the last hour with us. So we know you're all busy. Thank you.
Thanks, yes. Everyone.
Thank you. In a moment, a two-question survey is going to pop up on your screen. Please take that. And stay tuned for the post-event email tomorrow with the link to the on-demand presentation. Please go ahead and share it with your colleagues. Sharing is caring. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.